Let's all bow before Almighty Yahweh. Father in heaven, we're so blessed, we're so grateful for your guiding us into your truths, that we would learn of you and learn your ways. As we come off the feast, we're so thankful for the blessings of that as well. We ask the special blessing on all those who came, and that each one would savor the memories of a time well spent with the brethren and learning truths and having just the Spirit work among us and uplifting our spirits. We thank you, Almighty Yahweh, for guidance, for your word, your son, and we thank you for returning everyone home safely again as we look forward to the next feast. We pray, Almighty Yahweh, now that you'll bless the Sabbath as we worship you and honor you in all that we do. May these words be yours. In Yahshua's name, hallelujah. A lot of smiling faces out there. And that's wonderful, because here we are, basking in the afterglow of a feast that I think ranks in the top tier of all-time greats. The studies and messages were inspiring and informative. The eats were fantastic. Ate way too much, as was the fellowship, the youth activities. I could go on and on and on. The sincere dedication of those who came was clear. And the icing on the cake, of course, were the 11 who were immersed into Yahshua's name. Well, as always, those who enjoyed the feast most and got the most out of it were those who came with a helping spirit, serving the brethren, doing their part to make the experience enjoyable for all. And the question we must never ask, what's in it for me, but instead, what's in it for thee? A lady wrote and asked how the feast went, and then said she kept it in her backyard. From what I read in the scriptures, she didn't keep Yahweh's feast. From what I read in the scriptures, Yahweh says, come to see my face. From what I read in the scriptures, he says, this is a pilgrim feast. We go to where the body is gathered, where he places his name. I don't ever read where Yahweh said to Moses, go to Pharaoh and tell him, let my people stay so that they may keep my feast behind their homes. In fact, anyone who does so, I look at as a vigilante, taking Yahweh's law into their own hands. There are key essentials to a feast of Yahweh that are missing when you don't go where he places his name. If there's one characteristic, Yahshua the Messiah taught was his complete selflessness. His literal and spiritual sacrifice was for the world. He never thought of himself. He never did anything for himself. I don't read where he ate. He made miracles for everybody to eat, but everybody else ate. I don't see where he sat down to a big four-course meal. Even that. Mark 10:45, for even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and give his life a ransom for many. How do you do that when you keep the feast in your backyard? He even taught against self-centeredness in the Bible, in the body. He said in Mark 9:35, and he sat down and called 12 and said unto them, if any man desire to be first, the same shall be last of all and servant of all. Did he live up to those words? You bet he did. Over and over he did. Every day of his life he did. John the Baptist recognizes this need when he said, I must decrease so Yahshua increases. Put myself down and raise him up. And what we do to the brethren, we do to Yahshua. We raise the brethren, we put ourselves down. We saw many acts of self-sacrifice at the feast. Those who got the most out of it didn't sit around and wait to be served. They had the heart of Yahshua, and their love for others was evident all week long. To be genuine, the sacrifice of ourselves cannot be for personal gain or some other kind of reciprocity. It's not, I did that for you, and now I'm waiting for payback. In fact, Yahweh says you don't invite someone over to eat so that you can enjoy when they ask you over to eat. We don't serve to get glory from others, to keep a service score for personal gain or for any other reason, than for the love of the brethren, because we love Yahshua the Messiah, and they're his brethren. And we want to mold into the image of Yahshua. Paul said in Colossians 3:22, "Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing Elohim. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to Yahweh and not unto men, knowing that of Yahweh you shall receive the reward of inheritance, for you serve the Master Yahshua." You know, something very interesting happens when we serve others, when we put ourselves out there for the betterment of others. The spiritual rewards, of course, are great. We've all felt it. People like to help others because it gives them an inner boost, a spiritual high in some ways. And that's primarily why we give of ourselves, as Yahshua commanded. But also, many studies have concluded other things, believe it or not. When you give of yourself and your time for another person, you'll find the surest step you can take toward a happy and healthy life. Even the physical benefits are striking. A 2013 review of 40 international studies found that doing for others can add years to your life, with some evidence pointing to a 22% reduction in mortality. And you don't have to be older to benefit from that. A new study found that high school students saw a drop in their cholesterol levels after volunteering to help younger children once a week for 2 months, believe it or not. We instituted a dining assistance program this year, allowing young people to help those with special needs to eat and to get around. They loved it. They loved it. In fact, one young man lost his special assistance lanyard, you know, identifying him, and he stressed out over it. He couldn't find it. He needed it back so he could serve some more. You know, when you sacrifice your time and energy for others, the reward center of your brain pumps out the mood-elevating neurotransmitter dopamine, creating what researchers call a helper's high, hence the title. In fact, one study found that people who completed 5 small acts of kindness, like helping a friend, visiting a relative, or writing a thank you note, one day a week for 6 weeks, experienced a significant boost in overall feelings of well-being. According to Sonia Lebermersky, psychology professor at the University of California, each action has a cumulative effect. The more nice things you do, the more people will respond positively to you, and the better you will feel. And still there's more. There's more blessings for serving. A 2013 study in the Journal of Psychology and Aging revealed that adults over the age of 50 who volunteered at least 200 hours in the past year, roughly 4 hours per week, were 40% less likely than non-volunteers to have developed hypertension 4 years later. There's something that happens to us physically when we put ourselves out for others. Though researchers don't fully understand why giving back can have such a marked impact on blood pressure, they believe it may be linked to the stress-reducing effects of being both active and altruistic. As Donald Moynihan, professor of public affairs, said, "Our findings make a simple but profound point about altruism. Helping others makes us happier. Altruism is not a form of martyrdom, but operates for many as part of a healthy psychological reward system." And notice this insight. Psychology professor Barbara Fredrickson of University of North Carolina noted, "By creating chains of events that carry positive meaning for others, positive emotions can trigger upward spirals that transform communities into more cohesive, moral, and harmonious social organizations." You think there's a reason Yahweh calls us to come together and serve? It's not only benefits you, it benefits everybody. More cohesiveness, more moral harmony. No wonder Yahweh said not to forsake the gathering of ourselves together. For some reason, outsiders automatically think that obeying Yahweh means trying to earn high marks on the salvational point system or something. They don't grasp it, even the most basic, the most fundamental purposes for this narrow walk and why it is narrow. If they would just open their Bibles, they would learn that the Bible and its covenants teach about Yahweh's ways and how we must serve him by following the real-life examples of Yahshua. See, our first responsibility is to get the premise right. Salvation is not about reaping rewards, glories upon ourselves. Salvation's fundamental purpose far transcends that. Today's most glossed over, neglected, and ignored message is the kingdom and our part in it and how we prepare for it. Yahshua made it crystal clear that he came to preach and teach the kingdom of Yahweh, and yet you're never going to hear a word about that out there today. The believer said that Yahweh is his or her whole life. If you don't put him first, you have something else come between, then you've got two masters, and that doesn't fly. Yahshua said that will only turn out badly. You know, I've been around those that work with contact cement, like on Formica. You got to be very careful. You put contact cement on both sides, and if they just touch, man, they stick, and you're not going to pull it off. You might as well just ruin the whole piece. It's that powerful that when it sticks together, immediately you can hardly pull them apart. And that's how we tend to be in contact with one another. When we spend time with others while worshiping and fellowshipping with Yahweh, like we do at the feasts, the commanded days, we create a bond that is hard to break. The feasts themselves help us do that, especially the pilgrim ones where we gather together in a certain place. By entering his kingdom, the saints will be devoted to serving Yahweh forever. Notice the key word there, serving forever. If you can't serve your brethren now, how are you going to serve him for an eternity? Yahshua said, as you treat the body of believers, you treat him. The entire focus of the kingdom will be on him and doing his will. Day after day, if there is a day, I think time will disappear then, but no one will be focusing on themselves at that time. Man is self-focused. The natural man loves himself. He'll do anything for himself. He'll put himself before anything. But that nasty posture will be a thing of the past. Pride, self-gratification, self-esteem, egos, none of that's going to exist in the kingdom. All those traits emanate from the evil one. And he won't be around. He'll be gone. He'll be chained up. The purpose for knowing the truth now is the very same as Yahweh's kingdom. It means to serve Yahweh in both environments. Being in the kingdom also means serving in all its various ways. But it's a truth the church won't go near, because then that's only one short step to talk about obeying, and they don't want to do that. They've been programmed not to have any of that. I once talked with a man who was halfway convinced of the feasts. But he said his church argued that doing so impales Yahshua all over again. Let me say that again. Keeping the feast impales Yahshua all over again. Yahshua didn't die for feast keeping. He died for not keeping the feast. Sin. And all the other laws of Yahweh. The change in sacrifice does nothing to affect the point and purpose of his commanded days. Serving was always central to Yahshua's ministry. He was totally selfless. He could, so to speak, care less about himself. Every minute of his ministry, he spent sacrificing for others. This person who is our Savior had the entire universe and its glories at his disposal. He had boasting rights par excellence. He was everything. He was the universe. Think about it. He had every reason to glory in himself, but the last thing on his mind was himself. And when Satan tempted him those three times, he was trying to pull him back and get him focused on himself. You're hungry, you better eat. All these kingdoms will be yours. Jump down and the angels will pick you up and you'll be a hero. You. He wouldn't have nothing of it. He didn't come for himself. He came for others. And our walk is to be just like his. He is our example. Peter wrote, 1 Peter 2:21, "For even hereunto were you called, because Messiah also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps." I always say, man asked me at the feast, "What is truth? How do you know what's truth? How do you know you're following truth?" I said, "All you gotta do is follow Yahshua. Follow what he taught and follow what he did. You got no problems after that. If you can do that, you're home free." Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 11:1, "Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Messiah." So Paul knew he had to follow Messiah. We are learning and preparing for everlasting service in the family of Yahweh. The family starts here, and then it grows on into the kingdom. We don't obey for reward, but from a love for him. We obey because Yahweh demands it, and second, because we learn firsthand his will, which describe and define Yahweh and modify us, so one day we can administer the same things in his kingdom and teach those same standards about serving the King of the universe. Revelation 5:10 says, "And has made us unto our Elohim kings and priests," and or kingdom of priests, as it should read, "and we shall reign on the earth." This is big, brethren. Most view scripture completely backward because they don't know and understand what Yahshua taught about the kingdom. The kingdom. They never heard that he taught anything about the kingdom of heaven. They never looked into it. Some guy sent me a sheet, handwritten sheet, of all the passages on the kingdom. I was amazed. Old Testament, New Testament, didn't matter. Full of the kingdom. But that's one subject that's foreboden today. You're not going to hear anything about it. They have latched on to a silly cartoon fairy tale about getting wings and sitting in clouds for the rest of eternity doing nothing. In this brief life of obedience, we get a jump on learning to serve so that we can do that, be better servants when we join Yahshua's family, if we remain faithful. You know, Satan's ego totally derailed him. He had just the opposite. You look at Yahshua, find the exact counterpart, and you've got Satan. He did just the opposite. He was all for himself. He chose self and self-exaltation over service. Didn't he know that his existence was not about him, but first and foremost about Yahweh? Where do you think he came from? Sure he did. That's exactly why he rebelled. And he took a third of the angels down his slippery slope. That's what the disgruntled do. You ever notice that? People get disgruntled, they go around and bring everybody else down with them. Whether it's in the assembly, sadly, or out in the world. Many of us have seen this played out firsthand many times, and it's ugly. If you focus on self, there's no reward. As we go through the year, we observe various feasts. Each feast has a message. Tabernacles is a taste of the kingdom. A little sliver of it now. Cut from a much larger future pie. So if the kingdom is about serving, then the feast is about the same thing. It reflects the kingdom and serving our brethren as well. More than anything else, the feast is learning to live with and for the brethren. See, there's other lessons that you're not going to learn in your tent, in your backyard. And that's why Yahweh says, don't do that. He says, come before me, see my face. There's a reason we live in temporary dwellings at the feast. He calls us to come together physically as well as spiritually because that's what the kingdom is all about. Coming together. When we're all together physically, we're called on many times to serve each other many ways. By doing so, we learn lessons about service. Yahshua explained how we are to live the truth. It's counterintuitive to the world's ways. They don't want to do that. They want to live for themselves. or they want to have it both ways. You know, Matthew 10, or 20, 25 says, you know, Yahshua said, that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. But it shall not be so among you. You don't follow the world. You don't follow their ways. Whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Why did he say minister? Because a minister is just a high-class servant, just a special servant, that's all. I don't even say it's high-class. It's just glorified, maybe is the word I wanted, glorified servant. Whoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant, even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and give his life a ransom for many. Give his life a ransom. The total sacrifice for many. He did it. The ultimate sacrifice. Remember the parable of the Good Samaritan? The Jews had problems with Samaritans. They thought they were half-breeds, and they kind of were. They were displaced by, brought into that area, and the tribes, Israel's tribes, were taken captive out, so one of the enemies, Babylon, I believe, or maybe the Assyrians, brought in their people. So they were like half-breeds. But that didn't matter. They still could be Yahweh's people if they repented and changed. Anyway, in this parable, Yahshua showed that a good Samaritan outbeat all the other proud Jewish rulers who walked the other way. Yahshua was challenged by a certain lawyer, asked him how to inherit eternal life. He asked the lawyer, what does the law say? You're a lawyer. What does it say? He answered, you shall love Yahweh with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and your neighbor as yourself. Well, who's my neighbor? The lawyer asked. In response, Yahshua told the parable of this Samaritan who stopped by to help a man bloody and beaten along the wayside there after the religious leaders avoided him by walking on the other side of the road. The first question which the priest and the Levite asked was, if I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? But the Good Samaritan asked, if I do not stop to help this man, what's going to happen to him? One man put it this way, service is the rent believers pay for being alive. It's the very purpose of life and not something you do in your spare time. Sacrifice, especially among the brotherhood, among Yahweh's people. Serving the brethren. Those in the body serve others in the body. Yahshua said, and outside the body too, said, what you do to one another, you're doing to me. It was completely different, a completely novel way to think and behave. It was not natural that the leader was also the head server, but that was Yahshua. There he was, setting the example for us by his own intense life of service. Every day, I'd like to follow him around. He gets up in the morning. I don't know when he got up, but doesn't say, but here he goes. Okay, time to minister. And so he heads out to Galilee, and people start flocking around him. You don't hear anything about, well, he took a break, or he first had to, go down to McDonald's, get some coffee. He just gets up and goes. You don't hear anything about himself. A servant has the welfare of everyone else at heart and himself last. A servant's heart is focused anywhere but on him. And self-adulation, of course, as we all know, is the antithesis of Yahshua, which is Satan the devil. We don't have a procedure for every issue people bring up. The Jews tried to cover it, you know. They had their Talmud, which was the Mishnah, which is the oral law, and then the Gemara, which is commentary on the Mishnah. So they like to go back and talk about tradition. Well, our fathers said, and if you argue with a Jew, sometimes he'll go back to tradition instead of the Bible. We don't have answers to everything. We sometimes give it our best shot, our best studied response, trying to conform to the scriptures and what they say. For instance, at the feast, I got asked, well, do we cut alfalfa to feed cattle, my cattle, on the sabbatical. Well, I'm thinking, well, you don't plant. You don't reap. We are to, you know, make sure the cattle can eat. You even pull them out of the ditch on the Sabbath. You know, it seems to me that they need to eat, so I guess that's what I would do. Should I fast on atonement if I'm taking serious duty medications? And I say, you do what your faith tells you to do. Should I cut the power in my home on the Sabbath rather than making people work at the electric company to supply, you know, pay them for working on the Sabbath? That's a question. What do we do? Extend that beyond that. And what do you do about your money earning interest or, you know, your investments on the Sabbath? Do you pull it out Friday and put it back in Monday? What do you check your clothes? Was this made on the Sabbath? I better not buy it. I mean, where does it end? We can only do what, you know, really is in our power to do in this culture and let Yahweh's mercy take the rest. We try to conform to his will the best we can. Man asked me, what about, he was a dairy farmer. He said, well, now on sabbatical, I have bank loans. If I don't pay it off, if I just let the land rest, there goes my farm. What do I do? It's a question. We're in a culture now that doesn't conform in any way to Yahweh's standards and laws. So what are you going to do? There are circumstances that arise where we have to use our best scriptural judgment, asking Yahweh for his guidance. Trouble enters when we focus chronically inward. You know, you watch small business startups and you notice that the ones that succeed are those where the owner gets right in there with the troops. He's working twice as hard as everybody else, stays twice as long. Gets right in there, gets his hands dirty. He works harder than they do, and he succeeds. On the other hand, the establishments that go belly up have owners who sit there at their desk with their feet up and watch everybody else, barking out orders. I worked for one of them one summer while going to school, and the poor guys didn't have a clue how to run this business they had. So just before they were closing, they were making payroll by robbing the vending machines. Dave Thomas, the founder of Wendy's, once appeared on the cover of their annual report dressed in a knee-length work apron holding a mop and a plastic bucket. Here's how he described that photo. I got my MBA long before my GED. At Wendy's, MBA does not mean Master of Business Administration. It means mop bucket attitude. You know, every successful business, no matter what it is about serving others. Everybody works for somebody. I don't care what business you're in. You're working for somebody. The purchaser of your goods, your boss, the government. You're working for somebody. No matter what you're in, it doesn't matter. If you're a brain surgeon making rocket engines or flipping flapjacks, you're working for somebody. You're serving others. Paul wrote in Ephesians 2:10, "For we are his workmanship, created in Messiah Yahshua unto good works, which Yahweh has before ordained that we should walk in them." See, we were created to serve, to obey, and to show our walk that we mean what we believe. And the pinnacle of that is when we serve others and make sure that they are taken care of first. Nothing should be beneath us when it comes to serving. We need to do the best effort because we represent Yahshua and serve him. In Matthew 25:34, Yahshua explains the importance of serving in the body of Messiah. Then shall the king say unto them in his right hand, "Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungered, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me." All of these things we do for Yahshua. We do for the brethren. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, "Master, when we saw you hungered and fed you, or thirsty and gave you drink, when saw we you a stranger and took you in, or naked and clothed you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come unto you? And the king shall answer, say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you've done it to me. There's the link. Serving is the best use of anyone's time here on earth, I believe. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of Yahweh, for as much as you know that your labor is not vain in Yahweh. Whether you push a brother's car out of the ditch, visit the ailing, or pick up a cup off the meeting hall floor, you're serving others. Someone once asked why a minister subjects himself to all the trials and pains of others. Why does he spend night and day developing the most effective way to communicate the truth to others? Why does he subject his wife to the rigors of ministry, being away from home a lot and being unable to devote his full attention to her and the family? Well, the answer would be because a sincerely dedicated minister knows that the most fruitful and gratifying use of his time on earth is to serve Yahweh through serving others. A true servant knows it is not about prestige, it's not about glory, it's simply about being a good servant. And I tell you, like again, those that served at the feast came away with far more blessings than those who sat there and watched everybody else. It's simply about being a good servant. He has the time and the resources to be an effective servant. So he must do more than expected of him. We've all seen, those who have no title doing more than others who do. We're all just boots on the ground in Yahweh's army anyway. Time is something all of us have. We have the same hours in the day as the next guy. But what sets the servant apart is the way that time is used. Are you using your time to serve others? I guess is the question. You know, I really don't pity those people that are up to their eyeballs in serving others, because I know they're getting rewards far above what they're getting elsewhere. In fact, they're the ones most alive. If you're not serving, you're not living. You're just existing. Service makes life meaningful. The former reformer, John Wesley, had as his motto, do all you good you can by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as you ever can. Let's look at the characteristics of a great servant. A great servant is humble. Humility means not thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less. Humility is when you're so focused on others that you forget about your own needs. Yahshua was so busy taking care of others, he didn't have a place to lay his head. Peter wrote, all of you, be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility, for Elohim resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. 1 Peter 5:5. A great servant is compassionate. Sympathy is when you say, I'm sorry you are hurt. Empathy is when you say, I hurt with you. And compassion is when you say, I'll do anything I can to stop your hurt. I've noticed lately a lot of people confuse sympathy and empathy. They'll say, I sympathize. What they mean is, I empathize. I put myself in your place. Sympathy talks about sorry. Empathy means, I'm with you. Yahshua is our example of compassion. We read in Matthew 14:14, and when Yahshua went out, he saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion for them and healed their sick. Think about Yahshua's time here on earth. He only had three and a half years. He didn't have much time. He created time. He created human beings, but he and his father wanted him to experience exactly what we experience here on earth, so he can be the most righteous judge of us that there could be. To know what we go through, and yet he overcame. Not only did he overcome, but he gave us examples on how to do it ourselves through prayer, faith, and guidance that he gives us. No advantages to go through the temptations, the sin, the heartache, the disappointment, the abuse. He wanted to get down there with the troops, down where they live, and live with them. You know, humans, we need examples. We need to have something to follow. He wanted to give us the best example possible. How did he react when he was abused? When he was attacked? Called on an angel and pulverized his enemies? No, he had mercy for their ignorance. You know, a great servant is faithful. A servant obeys Yahweh, not out of convenience, not because it works for him and there's some advantage to him, but conviction. And Yahweh requires us to be faithful. Paul wrote, moreover, it is required as stewards that a man be found faithful. It's required. You have to be faithful. A great servant knows how to get to the heart of the matter and into the hearts of others. Paul also wrote in Philippians 2:4, look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Let this mind be in you, which is also in Messiah Yahshua, who being in the form of Elohim, thought it not robbery to be equal with Elohim, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself, and became obedient unto death, even the death of the stake. All the way to the end, he was obedient. All the way to the end, he carried out his mission as a servant of man. Wherefore, Yahweh has also hath highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name. If we follow him, that's the promise too. He'll exalt us one day if we remain faithful. But he went far and above just serving. He went to the very limits of what an individual can do for another. He's willing to give up everything, even the ultimate sacrifice. You know, what we do is puny in comparison. Yet sometimes the simplest of sacrifice done at the right time for the right place, for the right reasons, can have far-reaching impact. There was a story of a very ill and failing elderly man in a hospital and kept calling out for his son. He asked the nurse several times during the day, has my son arrived yet? Where is he? As the day wore on, there were no sign of his son anywhere. And when the nurse saw a tired, anxious-looking young man standing in the hall outside the ailing man's room, she grabbed him and rushed him to the bedside. Your son is here, she whispered to the patient. She had to repeat the words several times because he was heavily sedated. He dimly saw the young man standing there. He reached out his hand to him. The young man tightly wrapped his fingers around the dying man's hand, squeezing a message of encouragement. The nurse brought a chair and set it next to the bedside. All through the night, the young man sat holding the old man's hand and whispering words of comfort to him. The dying man said nothing as he held tightly to his son. As dawn approached, the old man died. The young man placed the lifeless hand he had been holding all night on the bed. Then he went to notify the nurse, who came and offered words of sympathy to the young man. But he interrupted and says, who was that man? Startled nurse replied, I thought he was your father. No, I never saw him before. I came here yesterday to visit a sick friend down the hall. Then why didn't you say something when I took you to him? She asked. He said, when you rushed me in there, I realized that the gentleman needed his son more than anything else on earth, and his son wasn't there. In his final hours, he needed to believe his son had come to him, and I realized how much he needed me. You know, we see examples of sacrifice all the time where people put themselves out for the benefit of others. But there's nothing like a Feast of Tabernacles to learn about serving others. I hope we all learned the lesson this feast. We were all presented with a myriad of opportunities to serve, whether helping with a program, helping with a meal, helping with post-meal cleanup, listening intently with compassion to a brother or sister who hasn't seen a believer for a year and needed just your ear, tell you about their problems, Then you offer your advice. Your cleaning skills, perhaps, your Bible understanding, picking up a piece of scrap. The list goes on and on. Going out with the youth and participating with them to make the feast a joyful time for them. So they'll remember these things. They'll remember the feast years and years from now. So I hope we all, in the future, will not just sit at the sidelines and watch the feast go by, but get involved with it. Ask how you can help. Ask what you can do. I'm sure the directors will come up with all sorts of ways, because many of them are pretty harried and exhausted, especially by the end of the feast. It's a big job. Any one of those programs is a big job. And your feast will be far richer. You'll be healthier, as we read. You'll find the feast more satisfying, and Yasha will notice as well. I have another suggestion for any time of the year. It doesn't have to be for the feast, but do something for somebody and just keep it quiet. Just keep it to yourself. Just step in and make something happen good for somebody. Somebody in need. Yahshua in Matthew 6 says, "For the good we do in secret, Yahweh will reward us openly." So let's look around, see how we can help. All year long, for whatever reason. Come to the help of others. That, again, is like that glue, that contact cement that makes the cohesive body what it is. Contact. Make it better this year, the next feast. Make it joyous beyond anything previous. The more you serve, the more you benefit. The more you serve, the more like Yahshua you become. And that should be our goal. I pray you had a great feast, sharing, caring, and enjoying the blessings. Tell everybody. Tell them to be there next year. And you also will be serving them. May Yahweh bless you.